Hello and welcome to Agents of Nonprofit. My name is Alexander Lapa and I'm here to speak with everyday superheroes helping nonprofits. Joining me today is Eleanor Fuca from the Science Philanthropy Alliance, or SPA. Eleanor, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you today.
So before we get started, I just want to make sure my listeners were aware. Eleanor and I know each other because Eleanor is a client of mine. I've been working with them for the past, I don't know how many months, on their Salesforce instance. I asked her to become a guest on the show and she gladly accepted. So happy to be here, but I did want to show that or share that level of transparency with you all. So Eleanor, again, what's really happy to be here or happy, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy you're here as well. And I was hoping if you could just share with people a bit about your background. How is it that you came to work at SPA?
Yeah, thanks for that question. My journey is actually really interesting because I was working in government. I'd been working for the state of Hawaii, supporting a senator and a House representative there. I also moved out to California and started working at the Tongan Consulate in San Francisco. And after being there for a couple of years, I wanted to venture off and see what Silicon Valley had to provide. So I moved over to a tech company to just get my feet wet and learn more about that space. And so instead of jumping into a tech company, I actually approached a temp agency to see if they could place me temporarily there. And they placed me at an organization called Calypso Technology, which is a financial software company. And I was tasked with managing their professional services agreements. And the individual I was covering for had gone on vacation for a month. And by the time she came back, she was like, "Do I still have a job? Everyone has been raving about you." They really loved my work there and they got me to move. They were trying to figure out how to retain me. So they moved me over to their sales team. And that's where I was tasked with working with their director of operations and managing their internal database that they built in-house. And so that's where I had my first exposure to working with databases and building, you know, custom objects, which prepared me for my next step in moving over to philanthropy. And so I felt that working for a financial tech organization was great, and I could see the benefit it had on other big corporations. But I was missing that feeling of doing something really meaningful to me personally. And so I had thought about moving over to the nonprofit sector. But what really eventually convinced me was this temp agency had contacted me again and said, you know, "Hey, we have this great opportunity for a nonprofit. Are you willing to go meet with them?" And so my initial reaction was like, the nonprofit sector will not compensate me the same as if I were working for a corporation. So he was like, "No, this nonprofit is different from any other nonprofit. And they are just beginning to form their organization. And so please, please, please come meet with them." And so so I did. And I came and I met with one of the founding organizations of the Science Philanthropy Alliance, the Moore Foundation. And they interviewed me. And here I am today. That was 2014. And so that's 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Still here.
Yeah. Missing meaning. That's something that I found as well in my life where, you know, it's great to be able to apply your skill set, but when you're doing it in a way that just makes shareholders more money and is not as fulfilling and you don't feel like the financial rewards are not enough, moving to nonprofits, I mean, it's a great place to be. And once you get there, I've noticed a lot of people get stuck. It's so sticky. So I'm happy you found your place.
Yeah. So I kind of want to talk about what made this organization different from any other organization. And what really captured my interest was I found out that the Science Philanthropy Alliance doesn't fundraise. You know, their mission was to increase funding for basic science. It was a time where the government funding was declining for research. And so six foundations got together and they wanted to respond to that and see how they could have an impact on increasing funding for basic science. Of course, their efforts would never replace federal funding, but they wanted to see what they could do. And they decided that maybe one of the ways that they could increase funding was to work with high net worth individuals. They didn't have a strategy at the time, but working with high net worth individuals would allow them to work with individuals that could give at a high level every year. And so, so the Science Philanthropy Alliance is focused on helping funders and philanthropists invest in foundational or basic science. And they do that with the hope that the investments today can yield the innovations of tomorrow.
So what does that look like in practical terms? Like, let's say, for example, and I hope you don't mind me using the acronym SPA, just because I'm used to it. So, you know, once they receive funds from these high net worth individuals, how do they allocate those funds?
Well, philanthropists usually, there's several types of philanthropists. There's the philanthropists that are just starting their philanthropy. And then there are philanthropists that have been in this field forever. And so when they approach us, it's often the new philanthropists are like, we need help with operationally. We need help with figuring out how to build an advisory board. We need to learn what areas of science are underfunded. Sometimes they come to us with an area of science and then they learn that it's, you know, there's enough funding for that area. So then we help them look at other areas that are underfunded. So those are the types of advice that we would give a new philanthropist. With older philanthropists or foundations that have been around for a while, we help them to be able to network and meet other foundations that have similar interests so that they can partner more effectively in different spaces. So we also provide opportunities for them to convene and meet other foundations through our events.
So this is how you build relationships with these high net worth individuals, right? You're hosting these events. Like, I must imagine that building relationships with high net worth individuals is a lot more difficult than with a smaller donor. There has to be, I've had interviewed people who say that it takes a longer time to connect with them, to reach them, to get them to pledge. How does SPA do it? And I mean, you don't have to give away your secret sauce, of course, but the idea is, you know, high level, like, if there was someone or a nonprofit that wanted to mimic this in a certain way, what high-level steps would you advise them to say, you know, here's more or less what you should look for or what you shouldn't look for when you're trying to reach these individuals?
High net worth individuals are always approached by fundraisers who are constantly soliciting funds from them. And so the thing that makes the Science Philanthropy Alliance unique is that we advise for free. We don't charge any fees. However, once members see the value of the services that we provide, or once they are committed to our mission, they then want to become a member and they pay different amounts. You know, the amounts vary based on the size of the organization, their endowment, the type of services that we provide for them. So they pay a membership fee to join the Alliance. And so in 2013, there was the six founding members, and today we have 36 foundations as part of the Alliance. And so they're often coming to us through word of mouth. You won't go anywhere and see, you know, an advertisement for the Science Philanthropy Alliance. It's a small group of, you know, foundations that we are focused in helping to give more effectively. And so it's through word of mouth that we're able to be introduced to other philanthropists. And they hear about our work, they become very impressed with it, and they approach us for advice. Also, a lot of funders are like-minded and they want to make the greatest impact. So by the time they approach us, they're already on the same page. They want to, they know that it's a long-term investment and they're not going to get the returns within a week or two. They know it's, they're in it for the long run and they're okay with that, which is what makes philanthropic funds more nimble and they're able to do things that government funding isn't able to do because they don't have timelines.
So that's really amazing that you get to a point where your reputation precedes you and now you have people walking through your door, so to speak, without you having to really advertise for it. I'm curious to know if you could give us just maybe a pointer of before you got to that point, you know, what was it like? Did you have to do a lot of outreach, a lot of networking, or was it always simple and straightforward?
Yeah. So when I came on board, I was working alone. For a while, I was just working and reporting to the board. And then in 2015, we hired our first president. Then he, Mark Kastner, who was the Dean of Science over at MIT. And then he hired an executive director. And she came on and she had a development background, which was really helpful. And when they first started, again, like I said, there wasn't a strategy. The founders just knew they wanted to do this, but they didn't know how they were going to go about this. So they started meeting with high net worth individuals in the Bay Area. And I think that it was really strategic to start here in the Bay Area because they're very open-minded. They're nice. They're ready to give. And so as they were going to meet with high net worth individuals, they realized that the issue was a lot of them didn't know where to start. And others that have been in the playing field for a while weren't talking to other foundations. And so that's how the advising part came about was, okay, we need to the best way that we can service philanthropists is to provide customized support and advice. Because they're all different and we don't have, it's not a cookie cutter shop. It's every single individual is important to us. And so therefore we provide customized advice for them. We may repurpose some of the materials that we've used with other philanthropists, but everything is customized and they come with their own interests. They come with their own vision of what they want to accomplish in their lifetime and even after. And so, so that's how the advising services came about. And we wanted to put together events and workshops so that they can learn from each other, but also from scientists, from the experts in the field. And so if a philanthropist came and they wanted to fund in astrophysics, then we would bring the best scientist in that field to, during a 1 or 2 day workshop. And then afterwards, they would determine what the underfunded areas are. And so it's really fun. And it did grow organically. And I think that's what makes it so special. The Alliance, and it continues to grow organically. So I'm really looking forward to, I've been here for 10 years and I'm really looking forward to what it will be in 20 years. It may not be around in 20 years, but but it's a very special and unique organization.
And you really picked the niche well, because I mean, the Bay Area is probably known for scientists or scientist-minded type people, right? The tech people and science kind of go hand in hand. So when you are promoting science research and backing science-based activities, that isn't a hard lift. Like it's most likely already in line with their passions and their interests. So from the get-go, you got that right, which is awesome.
And they were just very innovative and provided constructive feedback with the type of things that we should consider. And so that really helped us to figure out what our strategy, hone in on our strategy.
And what's great is that, I mean, some of these high net worth individuals are well known. These are not, they're truly high net worth individuals in the Bay Area. I was hoping you could share maybe a couple of them that are publicly known, part of your alliance?
Yeah, so we provide customized advice, but it's also majority of our the foundations and high net worth individuals we work with are confidential. So we don't publicly talk about them. But I can mention two because they've publicly acknowledged us in our work with them. And so one of the first individuals that approached us was Priscilla Chan. And so this was, I want to say it was in 2015. They were beginning to build their foundation here in the Bay Area. And so they were trying to figure out what the funding models would be, what the science advisory board would look like. And we also helped them communicate the launch of their new initiative. And so they were referred to us by other scientists. And so we thought it was really interesting because we just started, you know, a little over a year. And so we were all there at the launch of their initiative, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. And as I was sitting there in the audience, I was just like, I got goosebumps and hearing and listening to their story and their journey of what got them to create this initiative. It helped me to open my eyes and really visualize the impact that our work had on not just philanthropists, but also the world. The Chan Zuckerberg Initiative funds science in like all over the world, and they're helping scientists communicate with one another in different continents. And I thought that was a great experience for me to see firsthand how our work has a great impact on the world. The other individual that we worked with was Ross Brown. He is the president of the Ross Brown Family Foundation, and he sold his company and he wanted to donate the majority of it to science. And when he approached us, he didn't know where to begin. So our senior advisor, Sue Merrilees, as well as our former president, Mark Kastner, he's now a external science advisor. They both worked with him to narrow in on his focus and identify past giving that he really enjoyed and introduced him to other foundations and academic leaders for advice. And so that process took several years. I want to say three or four years. And he just announced that he was giving, you know, recently announced, I think it was in December of last year, that he was giving $400 million. He was committing $400 million to basic science. And so there, our senior advisor, Sue Merrilees, drafted a blog series about the journey of a philanthropist. And it's on our website. I encourage people to go there to read it. And there are two blogs about his journey in discovering what he really wanted to fund and the impact that he wanted to leave on the world. So those are two examples. There's so many more. And I want to give you an idea. Like we, just last year, we advised over 50 foundations and individuals. So there was 50 individuals and foundations, and we advised 95 projects for those individuals. And so that's the volume of funders that we're working with on an annual basis. And so there are many more high net worth individuals, and which is really exciting to see. But like I said, there are a few that have come out publicly to acknowledge our work and engagement with them. What I have seen also is that a lot of these funders give privately, that a lot of times they're not attaching their names to things. They go on giving quietly. And because they're just, that's their passion. And then others, you know, have big announcements, and that's fine too. because I think that encourages other funders to get excited about basic science.
That's awesome. Amazing success stories and amazing foundation. So you should be very proud. I was hoping we could turn the conversation to technology because, you know, keeping track of all these people, keeping track of these events, keeping track of the members can't be that easy. And I'm sure there is a certain sense of confidentiality. You know, what are the main points of current technology that you use at SBA?
I mean, the big one is our database, and that's Salesforce. We use Salesforce every single day. We were using Cirrus Insight to upload emails into Salesforce directly. But since working with you, I realized that we could do the same thing within Salesforce, that we didn't have to purchase a different software for that. We also use MailChimp for our newsletter. And at some point, we would like to figure out how to integrate it with Salesforce to ensure that our data is clean and that we have the most current emails for our audience.
So I was curious to know, in Salesforce, there must be all kinds of things you can track, because Salesforce being the platform that it is, you know, there's a lot of things you can do with it, not necessarily what you should do with it. And it's usually, as you know, the balance between, you know, it makes sense to put this in Salesforce or this doesn't make sense to be put into Salesforce. And I was hoping you could, you know, how do you guys make that determination of saying, you know, this is worth it versus this is not worth it? Is there any kind of guidelines that you can give another nonprofit looking to expand their use of Salesforce to say, you know what, you probably shouldn't track this meaning something that's related to what you guys do, versus you should definitely track this because, to your point, you know, having your connectivity to MailChimp allows you to get that more holistic picture of who's opening the emails and who's unsubscribing and stuff like that.
So when we first started, I was working by myself and I knew that I needed to find a CRM system and not wait for the president to come on board, because I was like, I already know who we're focusing on. It's high net worth individuals and foundations that are interested in basic science. And so I don't know if you've ever heard of the Giving Pledge, but Bill and Melinda Gates Warren Buffett created the Giving Pledge so that high net worth individuals can commit to give the majority of their wealth while they're alive, and sometimes once they've passed on. And so I pulled the Giving Pledge list, and it also had their interest. And so I started, I was like, well, I have the data that I need. I know that we're going to approach a lot of these people. So I started calling around to some of my friends that were working in other nonprofits, as well as development offices, and asked them the pros and cons of the databases that they were working with. And almost all of them said that one of the cons of working in their databases was there wasn't a lot of customization. And so during my research, I realized that Salesforce, that was their biggest thing, is that you could customize it and make it whatever you wanted it to be. And so I went ahead and I signed up with Salesforce, and I started entering all of the high net worth individuals that were interested in basic science, at least with, you know, starting with the Giving Pledge list. And just, you know, when I would read something, an article or something, I would add a high net worth individual that I learned was interested in basic science. And then over time, as our strategy became more refined, I created more and more fields in Salesforce. But then after a while, I would say after the fourth year, it was almost a little bit, there was so much that had changed from when we started. And so one of the questions that I asked myself was, in 5 years from now or 10 years from now, is this information important? And so that helped me to get rid of a lot of fields, so a lot of things that we were tracking that were unnecessary. At first, we were uploading every single email, every single contact that we had, but I thought to myself, well, a lot of the scheduling stuff doesn't make sense. Like, nobody cares from 5 years from now. No one cares that we scheduled this call at this time. The more important thing to capture was what came out of that conversation. Did this lead to something? And so, because that's what we use Salesforce for, most of all, is our engagement with our members and those that we service. And so that was the question that I would ask myself, is how useful is this data, and will those that come after me find this useful? And if it was no, then I would just remove it. And of course, you know, we steer away from keeping personal information, like, you know, whether someone's male or female or birth dates, like a lot of personal information, we don't track any of that. And at some point we thought that was cool. There, you know, it was like, let's congratulate someone on their birthday and wish them a happy birthday. But then after a while, it was just like, no, that's not really important. And people are becoming more conscious of like their personal information. So we took that out.
So started with Salesforce, which is really cool because you were a smaller nonprofit at then. And I know there's certain smaller nonprofits have an aversion to Salesforce, thinking it's overly complicated, but it's awesome that you saw the future roadmap and said, this is something that we can leverage, we can modify, we can customize and make it our own, which is great. But then it got to a certain point where, I don't want to say things got out of hand, but you definitely asked for help. That's why I'm around. You asked for help to help you clean it up, refine it, get the most out of it. So I was wondering if you could share with the listeners of what was that moment like where you said, you know what, I got a handle on things, but I think we can do a better job because either this is missing or I feel like there was a gap of some kind. And if you could identify what that gap was that made you reach out to an agency to say, we need a bit of help here.
Well, managing operations at the Alliance is a lot of work because it's the budget, the grants, personnel management, and the database is just a small portion of what I do. And that came to me by default, just because I was the one who basically built customized the platform for our needs. And so we had considered hiring someone full-time to manage the database, but we didn't think it was, after some thought, we didn't think that it was the best use of our funds because managing a database isn't a full-time job, at least for us. It requires someone with a very specialized knowledge. And a lot of times people who are working in databases don't, you know, they're not going to stay long-term at an organization. They're always trying to develop their knowledge and move on to the next big thing. And so we thought that engaging with an agency would be better because we wouldn't have to worry about turnover. And we wouldn't need someone full-time for this position. There's not enough work for a full-time person. And so that's why we turned to an agency, and also because it's just a small portion of my responsibility. I hadn't kept up with the Salesforce updates, and so going with an agency made sense because they were keeping up with all the updates and all the knowledgeable of all the various features in Salesforce.
And I'm happy you did because it's a pleasure working with you. So thank you for that. It's fun to see how you use Salesforce in a slightly different way, and it works for you, and it's awesome. So thank you. I'm curious then, in the last few minutes that we have, what is in the future of SPA? Where would you like to see the organization be in the next 2 to 5 years?
Well, we've seen a significant growth in our work. Just in the past 2 years, we've almost doubled in our advising, the number of foundations and high net worth individuals that we service and provide advice for. And so because we're seeing that increase of advising work, we're going to be growing. And we hired our first advisor in 2017, a full-time advisor. our second one in 2020. And then we hired another one full-time 2022 and 2023. And this year we're hoping to hire another advisor because the volume is high. And so there's a lot of growth at the Alliance. There are more philanthropists that are becoming more aware of our work and what we do. And that's exciting. And I think we're hoping to diversify our services so that it meets the evolving needs in DEI and basic research for high net worth individuals. We also will be producing more thought leadership reports. We just produced a report recently, the Science Philanthropy Indicators Report, which talks not only about the state of funding for basic research, but also philanthropy's growing role as a driver of funding. And that's on our website. I encourage people to go and read more about that. But yeah, but we'll be growing and producing more materials so that we can ensure that our members and advisees are giving more effectively in basic science.
Awesome. So if you could share some of those links so people can get in touch either with yourself or with your organization to find out more, where can people go?
They can go to scifil.org, scifil.org. And we have our 5-year strategic plan on there. It has a lot of information about the various services we provide. And like I said, the blogs that we recently released regarding our advising services. You can also visit our social media channels on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And our annual reports can also be accessed through our website.
Awesome. Anola, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. I really appreciated this conversation.
It was a pleasure to be here, Alex, and I really appreciate the invitation to be here. This was a great experience for me. Thank you.
All right, that's it for today. I'm Alexander Lapa, and I hope you join me again in the next Agents of Nonprofit.